Good afternoon. Hope everybody is having a restful and engaging, energizing Sabbath. You know, as the people stood there looking to the future, they absolutely had to know that things were about to change. Their feelings as they stood there were probably a mix of anticipation, hope, maybe a little anxiety, probably mixed with a little uncertainty, in for good measure. For most of their known lives, they had been led by one of two men whom God had used powerfully to guide and direct them. Yes, those men had their imperfections, they had their faults, but when we examine the fruits of their lives, they were clearly individuals that were connected to and led by God. And in turn, these people had relied on that example. They had relied on the example of the men, they'd relied on their directions, and they'd relied on their action to guide them to where they were now. And they were on the verge of achieving the hope and the promise that they had heard about, that they had dreamed about since they were children. Probably many of the people that were standing there the day were looking out and could remember the time when they would sit around the campfire and hear their parents tell the stories about the great salvation that their God was going to bring them, about the promised land, about his great miracles, and about the power that he exhibited to free them. I'm sure they remembered those times. And as it came time to inherit the land, which had already started, when they marched into the land, they went from victory to victory. The Eternal went before them, and they emerged victorious on a regular basis. But now things were different. Things were changed. As they prepared to move forward and finished what had been started, there was no Moses. There was no Joshua. They were both dead now. Things were indeed different, and they knew it. But God had prepared his people for this time, the time that they were experiencing. While the Eternal used Moses and Joshua to lead the people to the land that he had promised to their forefathers, that he had promised to Abraham, he wanted this change that was about to occur. He wanted to have a relationship directly with his people. He wanted his people to look and connect directly to him. He desired this relationship with them. He wanted to be their leader. He wanted to be their ruler. He wanted to be their king, their God. And their cohesion, their unity as a people, were defined by their connection to him. It flowed from the relationship that they were to have with him. So as he looked down on his people and as he led them, to help support this desire that he had to have this relationship with his people, he put in support structures. He gave them a priesthood. He gave them his laws, his statutes, and his judgments. He reinforced the family structures. He even went so far as to show them how to build and sustain a relationship with him, how to, in effect, structure their lives, to organize the way that they lived so that they had this ongoing connection with him. So after all of this, after he put all this time and energy, all this effort, it is noteworthy for us to consider what happened only one generation after Joshua's death. One generation. If you could turn over with me to Judges chapter 2. Judges chapter 2, and we'll begin reading in verse 7. We get a view of exactly where the people were at this time. Beginning in verse 7, we read, "So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord, which he had done for Israel." So as we look at the people, throughout Joshua's life, and throughout the elders that immediately followed, they stayed faithful. They stayed connected. Dropping down to verse 10, When all the generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them, who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them, and they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger, and they forsook the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroths. You know, from one perspective, it's a little bit stunning how quickly Israel turned from God. Within one single generation, they forgot. But when we consider the history of the church, it's not necessarily something unique that the people of God periodically turn away from him. You know, we see that Paul wondered when he was communicating to the Galatians how soon they were turned away from God and turned away from the gospel that was once delivered. You know, Jude writes also to the brethren, encouraging them to return to the faith that was once delivered. And he encouraged them to do that because other people were coming in and deceiving the people with another gospel, with something else disguised as the truth. So the fact that Israel forgot God is not in and of itself unique. But what's interesting is the example of Israel, because in this example, we have a unique view into what happened and to the fact and to the facts around what contributed to their forgetting God. What was it that happened so that they forgot their God? And it's their example, which is just that, for us, but it's also a warning. It's a warning for the people of God. So what happened? Why did this happen? What went wrong? You know, why did they turn away? The answer that we find, at least in part, is embedded in verses 11 through 13, which we read. You know, one of the things that God consistently encouraged people to do, and as we'll see here in just a minute, he even took the time to model, was that his people needed to build. They needed to construct their lives around him. His actions over the previous 100-some-odd years were intended to reinforce and to prepare his people for this time, for those ideals and those thoughts to be handed down and taught from generation to generation so that the people could sustain this change. You know, he had miraculously intervened in their lives. He had done things that hadn't even been considered in the scope of man's thought process. I mean, when do you have a God come down on the top of a mountain, burn the top off, and shake it like a rag when he comes down to meet his people? Doesn't. Except for him. He did. And he did all of this because he wanted his people to focus on him and construct their lives around him. Because when we build and construct our lives around God, it helps focus our attention on him. And when we do that, we remember. And when the community as a whole constructs and builds and structures their life around God, it creates a common shared heritage. And when that common and shared heritage is handed down from generation to generation, the community remembers. And as God was working with Israel, he obviously understood that forgetting him wasn't as possible. And that's why he warned Israel over and over to build a life around him and not forget. So throughout their wandering in the desert and coming into the promised land, he outlined to his people through various means and various ways how they were to build their lives around him. Gave them very specific examples on how to do it. And so for the rest of the time that we have this afternoon, the next 2 to 3 hours, Let's dig into the example that Israel has left for us. And let's consider just a couple of things that we can take into our own life to help us understand how to build our lives around God, and at the same time, specifically figure out what can we do when we leave here today? What is it that we can do? So let's begin in Deuteronomy chapter 6. If you could turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Now, it's interesting to start in Deuteronomy chapter 6 because the first half of Deuteronomy, quite frankly, is around focusing our life around God and centering Him in our life. But in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1, we read, "Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and the judgment which the Lord our God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you, your son, and your grandson, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged." You know, there's a clear expectation that God's way of life be taught and passed down from generation to generation so that we don't forget. But it's more than just that. You know, each generation has the responsibility to act as a link, to act as a connecting point, to facilitate that connection with God and help the whole community remember. It's not just about the individual. It's also about the community. Dropping down to verse 6. "And these words which I have commanded you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign to your hand, and they shall be as frontlet between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." You know, building a life around God, when we structure our life around Him, it requires that we put Him at the absolute center of everything that we do. We need to think on, we need to study, we need to meditate on His words, so that His words, His instruction, His direction, and His purpose is constantly in our mind. It's on the top of our thoughts. But then when we're with our families, when we're with our friends, when we're going about our daily routines, just the mundane things of life, the day in, the day out, the routine, the rigor that we have in our life, He's top of mind. So in effect, when we think about it from that perspective, what He's asking us to do is take the routines of our life and build them around a connection with Him so that He's at the center. So now, why is that so important? Why do we need to do that? Let's drop down to verse 10. "So it shall be, when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which He swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build, and houses full of good things, which you did not fill, hewn out wells, which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant. And when you have eaten, and when you were full," so when all of these blessings and all of these things finally come to you, and you establish routines in your life, "then beware, lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." You know, the part of the problem is when we as human beings, when we settle into the routines in our life, we tend to get stuck. We tend to get stuck in a rut. And if our routine, if the routines in our life are not built around God, and our focus and our attention is taken up with all these other things around us, the demands and the routines and the grind of life, and if He's not at the center, the more that we engage in those types of routines, the further away from Him that we get. And then we forget. But probably the most insidious thing about this process and about these kinds of routines, when they're established in our life, is that they're not really intentional. We don't start out our day by saying, you know something, God, I've got four areas in my life. I'm going to make you the top in three, but this one, you have to be number three today. We don't work on moving God out of our life. It's not necessarily intentional. It's not something that we plan. It just happens. We get caught up in the grind and the process of life if we're not intentional. And then we forget. And this is something that God warned Israel about. And through their example, it's a warning to us. So how do we think about building our lives around God then? How do we think about that? How do we engage our mind to think about how we build our lives around him? I'd like to look at two examples specifically and dig into Israel in this situation to give us some food for thought for when we leave. And the first might be a little bit odd, but I think it's very appropriate. And that's to consider how the camp of Israel was structured. How the camp of Israel was structured. So, just to take a step back. So, when Israel left Egypt, it's important to consider that they were completely immersed in an Egyptian culture and thought process. Everything they saw around them, the gods, the priests, the power, the armies, the wealth, the cities, the temples, it was all Egyptian. Their structure, their processes of their life were immersed in that environment. And you add to the fact that they were a slave people. They didn't have the ability just to go off and worship God. They didn't have the ability just to go worship God on the Sabbath. As a matter of fact, they even forgot when the Sabbath was. And the Eternal had to teach them when the Sabbath was. So when the Eternal rescued Israel from Egypt to become his special people then, he had to help them establish a different structure in their lives, one that pointed them back to him. And so what he did, he completely destroyed the structure that they came out of, and he brought them into a different structure, and he did that because people don't change quickly. That's not something that we do. Our habits and our routines take effort. It take focus, and they take time to change and rebuild. So how did he set up the camp? What did he do? So after the tabernacle was constructed, and if you could turn with me over to Numbers chapter 2. But after the tabernacle was constructed, he put the tabernacle in the very center of the camp, in the very middle. And we see this, you know, starting in Numbers 2, but if you think about where the tabernacle was in the very center of their existence. So outside the camp was the wilderness. Inside the camp was their known universe. And in the center of that universe was the tabernacle. And if we can look at Numbers chapter 2, we begin reading in verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, the sons of Israel shall camp, each by his own standard, with the banners of their father's households, and they shall camp around the tent of meeting at a distance. So it was at the center. So the way that the camp was constructed, you had the Levites, Moses, Aaron, and the priest, which created a ring around the tabernacle, which was in the center of the camp. And then you had the tribes of Israel around that ring of the Levites, Moses, Aaron, and the priest. And they were set up by north, south, east, and west. And you add to that the fact that we read in Exodus chapter 40 and verse 38. You don't need to turn there. But we add to that the fact that we're told that the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day. And fire was in it by night. A song that we just sang. So the fire was in it by night in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys. So think about what this meant to their psyche for just a second. When they get up in the morning and they go out to get their manna, what is the first thing they see when they walk out of their tent? Either a pillar of fire if they get up early, or a cloud over the tabernacle, reminding them of their God. What about their daily activities? Everything that they did in the camp was in the sight of the cloud and the pillar. When they met with their friends, when they worked with their family, the pillar was always there. What was the last thing they saw when they went in at night? You're in a light-deprived area. Don't have a lot of lights from the city out in the desert and the wilderness. But you have a pillar of fire over the tabernacle that gave them light in the camp. He was pervasive in their life. There was a consistent connection that the people had with him all the time as a constant reminder. He structured their living conditions so that all their activity surrounded him, that the community surrounded him, and that he was ever present. So what about us? You know, we know our future and we know our purpose. We know that our purpose is ultimately to become children of God. We also know that this life is really a training ground. It's for us to learn to be like our Father, to take on his nature and to be like him. So if we learn from this life, and we learn from that connection when we remember, and it's his laws and his purpose that we're supposed to be taking on, how does our life compare to the camp? What does that reference look like? You know, if we think about our life kind of like the camp of Israel for just a minute, think about it on a spectrum, one side to the other. On one side, we have the opportunity to structure our life like we want. I'll do this over here. I'll make this choice. I'm going to put this priority. I'm going to do this. Then somewhere down the road, maybe when we get into trouble, we go, hey, God, I'm working on something here and it's not working out. Come and be a part, but I need you just in this part of the camp. You can't really be at the center, but I got a place over here for you. I don't know if that's ever happened to anyone here. I know I've done that. Doesn't tend to work as well. But on the other end of the spectrum, we have a different approach where we put him at the center. And we organize our life, our thoughts, our actions, the choices and the decision we make around his preference, around his purpose. From the types of careers that we're going to have, the way that we're going to engage with people, when we're willing to forgive, when we extend mercy, all based around him. Two ends of the spectrum. You know, it's interesting to consider our life in that perspective and where we end up. And how do we structure and build our life around him? Food for thought. Another area that I'd like to consider is an area that God constantly reminded and specifically, repeatedly encouraged Israel to build into their lives. And that's the Sabbath day. You know, in Exodus 20, if you wouldn't mind turning over there, but in Exodus 20, we're instructed to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You know, the way God stated, the way he framed the fourth commandment is interesting in the context of what we've been discussing here this afternoon. We know that the way that we build our life, if we build it appropriately, it will help us remember. So implied in the fourth commandment then, especially if we take it in context of the discussion this afternoon, is a direction to structure the way that we approach to prepare and the way that we're going to keep the Sabbath. You know, when we build the structure in our lives to help us to prepare for and to keep the Sabbath appropriately, it not only helps us remember the Sabbath, but it helps us remember our God. It helps us maintain that connection. So in Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 8. I'd like to read this section, and then we can draw a few points to consider in our own life. It says in verse 8, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall do labor, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son nor your daughter, nor your male servant nor your female servant, nor your cattle nor the stranger that's within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that's in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." So if we think about the context of our discussion this afternoon and structuring our lives so we remember, a couple of points to consider here. The first is we're supposed to work 6 days a week. You know, embedded in this commandment is an expectation that we're going to have a life of accomplishment and that we're going to have a life of work and that we're going to perform that in 6 days of the week. Do we build that into our lives? The other thing to consider is that the Sabbath is different. It's separated and it's holy. What we do on the Sabbath day is different from all the other weeks. The Sabbath day is not just a do-over from Thursday or from Wednesday or Monday or Friday. It's different, and we should treat it differently. Now, it's not my purpose here this afternoon to go into the detail about how we keep the Sabbath. But suffice it to say that the Sabbath is a unique time that is holy to God and that is made holy and is a special time for us to have an intimate, direct, deep connection to Him that we cannot have any other day of the week in the same way. If we also consider Mark chapter 15 and verse 42 and John 19 and 31, again, no need to turn there, but we also see that the day right before the Sabbath is a preparation day, a day that was specifically intended for us to take some time and do all those things that are finally backing up on us that we need to do so we're actually prepared to keep the Sabbath. So when we're thinking about the routines in our own life and how we structure and build our life, do we think about the Sabbath from this perspective? It's not a day like any other day. So when we start planning and living our life and we're working through the week, do we engage in work and gainful accomplishment as we're preparing for the Sabbath? Do we take that day before the Sabbath, the preparation day, to go ahead and move everything else out of our life so that we're prepared? Then when we get to the Sabbath, we're ready to have that intimate contact with Him. Is that how we structure our week? You know, it shouldn't be lost on us that this is one of the things that God specifically pointed out to Israel. Over and over and over. They didn't do it, and they forgot. You know, in many ways, our life, the place that we're in today, is reflective to where Israel was right as Joshua died. So much in our life has been accomplished. But there is so much left to do. God wants an intimate connection with each and every one of us. He wants our lives built around Him. And He wants that connection. He desires it with each and every one of us. Let's build our lives. Let's build the community around Him. And remember,